I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's so.
Hey all, welcome to Comic Pop Library, episode 9. We're here again with the whole crew, Chris, Matt, Johnny, and myself. We're going to be reviewing The Nobody today and Dauntless, the first book of Lost Fleet. We're going to start this off with Johnny, who's going to be doing Nobody.
Yeah, the book is called The Nobody. It's written by Jeff Lemire. Jeff is an award-winning graphic novelist. He wrote the Essex County trilogy, which I would also recommend you get in your library. What's really cool about this particular graphic novel is that it's monochromatic. The color is black, white, and a light blue. And it's what that does is it serves to illustrate that this tourist town in the dead of winter, which is the off season for the tourism, is pretty much dead. Lifeless, not a lot going on. And so when I thought about that, I was like, well, it's kind of cheesy, but when you get through, as you read through the book, it really does add its own character, just that single blue color throughout. But it's really a retelling of The Invisible Man, and it explores like the deep, dark prejudices of small towns, and from a small town, and
the rumor mill.
Yeah.
Who did what? They did what?
Right. Exactly. And it takes some surprising twists and is a lot more violent and brutal than I thought it would be. And I like it. Not because of that, but I like it. So I recommend it.
Where'd those whips and chains, Margaret?
Something. It's violent. Okay.
Definitely the artwork does lend itself. It is a bleak atmosphere. It's one of those where you look at it and like, you know, like Johnny said, it's bleak, it's winter. The small town feels, it's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, this is in a backwoods type area. He's from Canada, so this is kind of set in a Canada-type atmosphere. Or you could possibly even say Eastern America,
yeah,
with the woods.
Yeah, like northeastern, northeast. Maybe even Canada.
But it's one of those where you're going to read it, and you're not going to get away from this. Like, God, I feel ready to do something. It's almost like, damn, that's kind of depressing, yeah, man.
Mankind is terrible.
Yes, we are.
But yeah, that was the whole thing with Invisible Man, though.
Right, right. You know, commentary on human beings and our tendency to be, you know, less than awesome.
And I know Chris did not touch this.
Well,
he was scared.
I started reading through the first few pages of it and decided that it wasn't for me. I wasn't going to be interested in it. I wasn't going to get anything out of it, so I passed it on.
And then Matt.
I passed it on and kind of looked through it and went, okay, yeah, this book is really strange. And I don't know, maybe it was the blue that threw me off on that one, because I was expecting another black and white one.
Did you recognize the representation of the Invisible Man, though?
I did. In the first few pages that I read, I
thought, maybe that's what it was. Wasn't really sure, but that was just one that was kind of weird to me. And it might have been the blue. Might have been the blue, you know, Johnny was talking about, that kind of threw me off. I read the first couple pages, flipped through the rest of it, and went, okay, yeah, this is just weird looking.
Right. And don't misunderstand me not reading it as it being bad. No. I wasn't in the mood for reading it, I guess.
Right.
So. Well, with graphic novels, and Johnny, you can jump into, because I'm sure you probably found this out, you have to be able to read the artwork as much as the words.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't enjoy one, it's going to be hard to get into
absolutely.
The other.
Absolutely. Well, this one has entire pages where there's no dialogue. It's just a series of drawings that tell you what's going on. So, you know, the in this one in particular, the artwork really serves to set the mood, to tell the story, to really, the artwork has a personality all its own, really. And the writing also is crisp. It's not overdone. And it tells the story in a concise manner. It's really good.
Now, here's a question for you. How does this, this is American, yes. right? How does this compare to some of the other graphic novels from other countries? Such as Japanese or whatever.
Well,
Japanese has its own flow. It's almost like shorthand to a degree, because like we mentioned last podcast, they're doing it so fast. This one they get into a little bit. It depends on the writer and artist.
Right.
Some of them are wordy, some of them aren't.
Right. If you read, say, Neil Gaiman, he's a writer, first and foremost, but some of his most famous work is the Sandman series. It's a comic book series. That's really how he gained his, like, rock star status that he enjoys now. And he also tends to write in very long sentences. You know, he's not one of those short, you know, one or two word sentence guys. It's you have to read it, and like the entire paragraph might be a sentence, which is really odd to see in a comic book, but it works really, really well. This one is not like that. They tend to be shorter sentences, and tend to use dialect of people in like small Western towns. So the two play really well because both the artwork is spare because it's just blue, black, and white, and the dialogue is pretty spare. And so it gives this whole vibe of a desolate winter tourist town in the off season. It's really cool.
And with Jeff Lemire, he's one of those that he doesn't write action. He'd rather write character. So even though it's sparsely written, the artwork is part of that character development as well. That would set you in the mood for the story. And like Johnny said, the town actually becomes a character because that it's so bleak and everything. Question I have for you, Johnny, and maybe I'm just nuts. There was a section in here where he goes to the lake and he sees the lady down here, and I'm assuming he's thinking of his assistant at the time, but when I first read it, I was thinking, is this that one dude's wife? Because the girl talked about the wife disappearing. So
it
threw me for a little bit.
Right, and I think they do that intentionally. What he's seeing there is his wife. Whatever concoction he consumed or injected himself with or whatever it was that made him invisible also made him mentally unstable, and he will and does harm people. And when he first became invisible, he sort of blacked out, and when he came to, his wife was no longer among the living, which is part of the reason he's on the run. It's kind of easy when you're invisible.
Is this a book in a series then?
No.
This is a single standalone comic.
Standalone, put out by Vertigo.
Yep. Like I said, I tend to like a single standalone story in comics because it's... It tends when they tell single standalone stories, they tend to rely on the art a little bit more because it has to be concise. The whole story has to be told between two covers, and they don't go into another book. So the artwork tells as much of the story as the dialogue in these sorts of books. Whereas in others, whether it's a long series, they may not spend as much time on the art.
And this one, I think a teen could be able to read it.
Oh, yeah.
I think maybe even 14 up.
Yeah, maybe.
Because there is some violence, but it's not bloody violence.
No. Well, the guy's invisible.
There's not splatters of blood all over the place.
And so
true, it is invisible.
Blood invisible?
Yeah.
It's like, what was that? Oh, I can't. No, I guess nothing. A bird pissed on me. No.
Yeah.
There's another edit.
But this is one that I think, like I said, 14 and up would be fine with it. It would be one that you could put into a classroom setting.
Oh, yeah.
And examine. Oh, God, what am I trying to say?
You could put it in a social studies. Yeah, you could put it in an art class. You could put it in an English course, or all three. I mean, it really is one of those that is very artfully done, very well done, and would be a boon to your collection.
Good, if you can't tell, I'm the older of all these group, and I'm the one doing all the having fun.
Your wife not let you out much, or what?
I've earned my stripes. I got to have fun now. I'm not quite the dirty old man stage yet, though.
I'm practicing now.
Just getting warmed up for that later.
I want to be good at that later.
I'd like to thank one of our sponsors at this time, Music Alley from Mivio. Check it out at music.mivio.com. That is MUSIC.MEVIO.com. Or you can go to our site, Comic Pop Library, for links to Music Alley and our reference links located within our left navigation bar. And now, back to the show.
Next we have up Chris. He did Dauntless Lost Fleet. I'll let you take it away, sir.
All right, so this is looks like a pretty short sci-fi novel by Jack Campbell. And this is part of a series. This is the first book. I believe there are six more in the series. There's a total of six.
You can talk. Go ahead. We heard you whisper that.
Richard's over there holding up his fingers.
When you whisper into a microphone, they can hear you.
What I was going to say is that there are five more in the series, but he's holding up six, so it threw me off. All right. So anyway, so basically what this is a ship. The Dauntless is the name of a ship that picks up just this floating life pod that was showing life signs, and it had been floating in space for 100 years, okay? So they open it up, and there's this guy in there who's a legendary captain of a ship in a war against the Syndix.
The what?
The Syndix. It's a humanoid race. Matter of fact, I think they are a human race.
Yeah, I think it's a split.
Yeah. So,
it's kind of from the same gene, but when we went to space, they kind of went their own direction, and I can't remember the others. Is it actual humans that he's part of? They kind of went their separate ways.
The gene pool separated.
Yeah.
Yep. But anyway, so he retains his captain status as he's on the Dauntless, and he's thawing when the book starts from cryogenic freeze or whatever. So he probably hasn't been out of his pod for very long when the Admiral of the fleet. Yeah,
I think it's Admiral.
Admiral of the fleet comes up to him and says, "Hey, I'm going to go over there and negotiate an offering so that we can get back home so that we don't have to lose any ships in this conflict that we're having right now. And if anything happens to me, you're in charge." So he's like, okay.
He dies.
So, yeah, the Syndic ship, he dies.
Saw that one coming, and I ain't read the book.
So it kind of goes on from there. You know, his whole goal is to get them home safe with as few losses as possible. I didn't read the last chapter purposefully because I didn't want to give the ending away.
It's appreciated.
Well, I'll put it this way. It's part of a series, so it's pretty much stops and you'll pick up at the next book. So
right.
There was an ending, but you know it's a continuation.
Right.
So their whole goal in this is they're trying to get home. Home being Earth?
Yep.
Okay.
As far as I can understand, it's Earth.
Yeah. Whoever the non-Syndic homeworld. you're assuming that they're human too, but you're not so sure if home is Earth. You kind of assume that. But they are carrying very special cargo. So that has to make it back too. So nothing really can happen to Dauntless.
And it's one of those where they have light speed capability, but the new technology is using wormhole technology. Well,
something like that. Yeah, it's faster than light.
Buck Rogers, 25th Century, that TV show back in the day.
Yeah.
They had Stargates.
Way back in the day.
Well, kind of like, you've watched Babylon 5, right?
Yes.
You're talking something similar to that?
Or Stargate SG-1.
Or Stargate SG-1.
They had them in Atlantis more. Okay. The floating Stargates in space.
Right.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
The one Umari came to. Yeah.
The human side, for lack of a better term, they have that capability.
Okay.
They have to go to those Stargates. But the Syndix drive, the way I understand it, they just, it's kind of like in the Star Wars.
Something net.
Hyperspace, you just hit button.
Hypernet or something.
And you go. You don't need a gate.
But they have to have a key.
Right, you have to have that key, and Dauntless has the key.
And they even go into how big the key is. Because, you know, it's not just one of those things that'll fit in your pocket. You know, it's an actual...
It takes up an engine room, basically.
Yeah.
Big key.
Yeah.
Well, at least it's difficult to lose that way.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
or
not like,
easy to lose when you're looking at space battles and you lose a ship.
Right, and well, they can't. But... The thing is that they
you're not gonna like lose it under your couch.
Yeah, you're not gonna put it in your pocket, forget it, wash your pants or something. Yeah,
no,
you know,
no, you're not.
So, and there are specific jump points where you can enter that travel, that like what do they call it?
No, I can't remember.
So.
Light speed, for lack of a better
word. The book pretty much takes place in between light speed jumps, you know. So the first jump took you to the Corvus system, and a bunch of stuff happens there. Then they see the Syndix, and then they run, and then they jump, and then they end up in another system, and then a whole bunch more happens there. And then I'm guessing the book's going to end with the annihilation of a small Syndic battle fleet, so.
Basically. And getting ready for another jump.
Right.
And one of the things that keeps this ball rolling is that when they're in between stages, you know, this is a 100-year-old guy. He's been in hibernation for 100 years. So he's 130, 120-something. Well, he's got all these other captains that are resenting him, and he's trying to play herd on all these captains, and they've learned a different style of battle, which is full bore, just attack.
Just hit the gas and pull the trigger.
Right. No strategy or anything.
Right.
It's them kind of relearning the strategy of warfare. He's the only one that really knows. And even the
he's only knows what he's doing.
And even the Syndic is this way. All these hundreds of years, they've been just going head to head.
More like the Civil War. Stand there, shoot at each other, and hope you hit something, and when you're out of bullets, run away.
Right. The one thing that was a concept that they really wanted you to grasp in this book is that everything happens faster than you can see. Everything is really everything is really focused in on what's happening on his instrument panel, which they didn't describe too much of.
But enough that you kind of got the idea.
Right.
Which it's was an interesting sort of concept.
Holographic sort of display. Right.
Because most of your sci-fis, it's real time.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this book, it's actually delayed however many minutes.
Right. It's based off of the time of light speed.
Right.
So
he's having a plan what he thinks will happen if it's 8 minutes ahead, what the enemy do 8 minutes ahead instead of him reacting right away.
Right. So the whole delay between a Doppler radar, you know, takes time to shoot the radar out and bounce off an object and then come back. Well, that's happening in space, so there's like these 5 minute intervals where you're seeing what they were doing 5 minutes ago. Mm. You're not seeing what they're doing right now.
Right. That's interesting. That's an interesting concept.
I liked how they did it. They set it up good, and I think there was two battles. One to get away.
Right. One was an escape because they had an auxiliary ship that needed help, so the whole point was to get it fixed. So that was the first battle they were just getting away from. The second battle, the actual battle of the Syndix actually went through their formation, and of course they couldn't see it because it was happening so faster than they could see. When they were passing him, they were talking about what was happening on his instrument panel, not what they could see.
Hmm.
Right. Which, like I said, was a cool concept, because I mean, you literally had to get into the other admiral's head to kind of know what he might do.
Mm-hmm.
But since he knew that these two cultures were going head to head, he had an upper hand because he had the schooling of how to do strategy, how to plan ahead, or nobody else in this time frame has actually ever done.
Right.
Interesting. So, sounds like an interesting book.
Yep.
And then in between, there are snippets between captains, like I said, and if that continues too long, I can see that getting old.
Yeah.
And it looks like it could be the same concept.
It happens
a couple of times.
It happens a couple of times in the Corvus system. It does happen again in the next one, the Caliban.
So, and he's kind of doing politics where,
right,
how can I put them somewhere where they won't do too much damage, but yet they retain their captaincy, so I don't have a mutiny.
Right.
Mm.
And in the conflict that he has with another captain in the second system that they were at, I want to say the insubordination happens during the battle.
And he does take that one out.
So, yeah.
Because it was one of those old tribes where you look at today's Navy and Marines, they basically have the same concept.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Marines, they're under their own command. And John has gotten onto the Marines' good side. And the captain that Chris talked about, he started bombarding where the Marines were at.
Jack.
Well, Black Jack's his nickname. John Gary is his actual name.
Okay.
Don't ask me how to Jack. That was screwy with me reading
Black
through
Jack
this.
Gary.
John Black Jack Gary.
Yeah.
Okay.
It screwed with me because I was like, it's Jack Gary. No, it's John Black Jack Gary.
Yeah.
But he replaced that captain real fast, and he actually had the Marine detachment go over there, or they were actually on the ship.
They did an honor guard for him.
They did honor guard, in quotes, and let him off the ship where he basically, the second time with this other captain, he's like, you can't do this again so soon. It's going to look like you're replacing captains with people that will be in your favor.
Right.
So it has its intrigue in space battles, which to me, it hits my wheelhouse right on point. I mean, yeah, this is great. Parts of it kind of reminded me of Star Wars with the big capital ship. Not the small fighters, because I don't think they had fighters. There was big capital ships.
Right.
So you're
capital
thinking,
ships, battleships.
Right, you're thinking of the Star Destroyer and a Mon Calamari cruiser. Big capital ships.
Going at it.
Yeah. So.
Neat.
But this is what.
They have this weapon that breaks down molecules.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Interesting.
So anything it touches, it's vaporized.
Doesn't just blow a hole in the ship.
Right.
God,
it's a beam. So
you guys
they basically cut. Basically.
I'm not that much younger than you.
True. Do you remember, Matt?
Yeah.
There was a cartoon back in my day called Star
Wave Motion Yamato.
Battleship Yamato.
Yep. Used the Wave Motion Yamato.
Battleship
Yamato.
Eating candy. Need to hurry up, guys. All right.
Yeah.
All right, so we had some technical difficulties with the recording, so we're back on schedule now. So
are we back on?
Blame
we
the
are
IT
back
guy.
On.
Blame the IT guy. Thanks, Chris.
Oh, no.
Blame the computer.
Don't say who it's from, because then we'll never get a discount from him again.
Ooh, can I guess until you get it right?
No.
Oh.
But what's the age range? What do you feel?
For this book, I don't know. I would probably have to say older juvenile, younger adult.
Like 12 and up? Or
I would say 14 and up.
Okay.
Would you agree, Richard?
Probably. Unless you have a 12-year-old that's real mature and will understand some of the mechanics.
Right.
It doesn't get real big into mechanics, but it does, get a little bit into the like the engines and how long he's been, and like we were talking about the strategy having to be so many minutes ahead. So
they put a maximum, like a speed limit when you're in a system at 0.1 light speed. So you got to have a concept of how fast that actually is.
Nah.
Really, really, really fast.
Yeah.
It's like 6,000 miles per hour or something like that.
I would say upper junior high, 7th, 8th.
Okay.
High school would probably definitely get it.
Right.
If you got a sci-fi buff, definitely, I think they would enjoy it. What type, if they were watching a movie, what type would you call this? Star Wars or Star Trek or blending?
Yeah.
Sci-fi genre, total, just
Yeah, but it's not fast-paced, but it's not slow either. There are slow parts, though.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Chris and I talked about this earlier, that there was a little bit of a lull time. I mean, the battles are the fast-paced stuff. The between battles, it's a little cumbersome a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think that's... Unless you got more, Chris.
That's it.
That's it.
Nope.
Well, as long as you enjoyed the book. As long as you enjoyed the book.
I
did.
I've been bugging our local library's acquisitions manager to get the next one in so I can read it.
You can interlibrary loan them from us.
Okay.
We have the whole set.
Did you get the whole set?
We did.
Awesome.
I plan to go back and read them after I get through with my other stuff I want to read.
Right.
Tips and tricks. We kind of do that occasionally. We'll do this now since I just mentioned interlibrary loan. If you're unfamiliar with the library system and listen to this, or just somebody working on staff that's not quite familiar with interlibrary loan, if your library does not have a book or a movie or a TV series, they have a person on staff that most of the times their job is to, you fill out a little form, what you would like, you, gets turned into that person, search through it on the internet for other libraries that might have it, and ask to borrow it. Depending on if libraries have it, usually you'll get it, and you have about a regular two-week, three-week time. Mailing-wise, if you have a courier system, it's pretty decently. It's probably a week's time you might get it. If you're using mail, most interlibrary loan goes fourth-class mail, so something that's really far away will take time. We've had some packages take up to a month just to get to us.
I ordered a climber's book for motorcycle I just bought 2 weeks Vancouver, Washington.
So it's getting a little better. But ask your librarian about that. I'm sure Johnny's familiar with the system too.
Yep. So used it.
Most of the stuff that's out there you can find in some library. The stipulations is that library has to be willing to lend it to you. And then just waiting on it. If you're wanting something fast, if you're a teacher and think, I need this right now, it's not going to happen.
Buy it.
Plan ahead. If you're going to have a unit in October, even though this is October, it's just an example. You have a unit in October, plan it out in September and order it in September. That way you have it there, you can get your information and go on.
Right.
Otherwise, you're not going to get it in time for your classes.
And a lot of those libraries will renew the book if you need it longer. So.
Right.
Yeah. Especially if it's like a teacher or something like that. You know. Yeah.
But that's it for this time, guys. Unless there's anything else, I think we can call it a night.
We're good.
All right.
All right. We're out. Take it easy.
Bye-bye. I could see it all so clear.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show host are their own and are not reflective of any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.